Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Happy Tech Tuesday. Really excited about today's show. Really excited about all you startup founders that are seeking a way to get your technology or your companies to market, or maybe you've already come to market and you're looking for ways to increase. You know, we're going to talk about a lot of those concepts today with our guest today, Kevin Lloyd of Mile, which I'll introduce here in a moment. But, you know, if you've been following our show and you've been listening, you know that every day is a different topic. And today is Tech Tuesday. And so we want to focus in on how technology is just something that we should pay attention to as business owners, whether it's the integration of technology within your business or whether you have a concept or a technology that you want to invent and overall bring to market. We want to discuss those aspects. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 859-291-2255. And once again, that call-in number is 859-291-2255. If you want to send me a message directly, you can do so at info@drbaker.us. Once again, that's info@drbaker.us. Now, for the listeners out there, you know that we are covering different ways to make your business healthy. You know that I own the only business hospital in the world as we service 14 countries. I wake up every day to make sure that your businesses are healthy and that they are established appropriately and that you are growing that business to the best of your capability, one, and with the amount of resources that it takes in order to preserve your longevity. One thing that I find really unique is, you know, the dichotomy of technology. And when I say the dichotomy of it is that it's almost split in half, like Democrats versus Republicans, is that some people embrace technology. They're very enthusiastic about it, and everything they do has a tech feel to it. Then you've got another group of business owners, entrepreneurs, department heads that they really don't like technology. They minimize it as much as they can. They only work with it in the event that they have to. And what I recommend is that there is a much more balanced approach to our view of technology. Too much technology actually doesn't work for us as a good thing because you become dependent upon it in a way that may not be conducive for long-term viability, meaning that in the event that your technology goes down, then you may not know how to operate. But simultaneously, if you don't know much about it at all, you get left behind in a world that essentially is unforgiving. And so you can be forced out, and therefore it will cause the death of your business or the death of an operation or a project. So we have to have a healthy look at technology. We have to understand our relationship with technology, and we have to know how to use and leverage technology. We have to recognize which technologies work best for us and our lifestyles. And number two, we have to show vision with technology to determine what's coming down the pike and how do we use it for our best benefit. So in today's climate, what we know is that technology governs everything from how we order food to how we run our business, to how you might get your tickets for the movies. Any of these aspects, you know, can use technology. You know, I think the pandemic was, you know, really, I would say, eye-opening for many people, is because from an education standpoint, our children were unable to go to school, and technology allowed for them to learn at some level. I know the experimentation wasn't the best. No, not everyone had a great time with e-learning or just learning remotely, but the point of the matter is that it still could exist because technology existed. And so that's what I talk about with our behavior and interaction toward and with technology, and how do we use it to make sure that we're leveraging in ways that ultimately carries us to the level that we want to go. And with that, that's a good segue to our guest today, which I'm excited to bring to you. It's a gentleman that I've known for years. Nobody packs more excitement, enthusiasm than this gentleman. Kevin Lloyd is the CEO and founder of Mile, which is making your life entertaining. And he created a platform that, quite frankly, does just that. So without further ado, I'd like to bring on today's guest, Kevin Lloyd. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Dr. Baker. How are you today?
You're doing fantastic. The sun is out. Life is good, and so I can't complain about anything at all. And so within this hour, we're going to help people understand a little bit more about Mile, a little bit more about what it's like to be, you know, an entrepreneur in the space. And yeah. So to give you the proper introduction to our listeners, can you tell everyone about Mile and essentially what you created?
Yeah, so I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show, first of all. So MYLE stands for Make Your Life Entertaining. So that's MYLE. It's a social activity and entertainment marketplace. So my wife is my co-founder, Sherry Lloyd, right? So Sherry and I co-founded MYLE literally 8 years ago as far as, you know, getting this thing started. But really the last 2 years is when we really kind of put our feet on the ground and said, hey, we want to bring this vision to life, and we developed what we consider 2.0. And I'll share more the whole history behind it, but 2.0 last year. And to give you the thought process behind this for your audience is MYLE is this entertainment marketplace where on one side of the marketplace is great for your promoters who are posting events, promoting events, selling tickets, as well as getting engagement information all through one platform now. On the other side of the marketplace is great for people like you and I that are looking for things to do, places to go and food to eat, in which we say just MYLE it. And I think Dr. Baker's familiar with that term.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know what's remarkable about MYLE is it makes everything centralized and simple to find. So when we talk about our lives being entertaining, oftentimes people just think about restaurants and where can I go to eat tonight? Well, I guess in certain regions of the country, that's the reality. But MYLE goes significantly further than that. And so if you're an enthusiast in a host of areas, then you can find those activities on MYLE. Is that right?
That is correct. That's correct. So that's that holistic piece that you mentioned as far as like things to do, places to go and food to eat all in one, which is unique because at the end of the day, every day we're looking for food. But then on the weekends, especially, is when we're like, what do we want to get into and where should we go? So we wanted to bring that all in-house to one place for you.
Well, I think what's remarkable is that now we're using technology to assist us with really the governance of the balance of our life. You know, we spend a lot of time working. We spend a lot of time doing things that are necessary to maintain a household. But when you want to have that time where, you know, maybe there's, you know, the arts that you want to frequent, or maybe there's a seminar that you didn't know was in town and you wanted to participate in, MYLE is a hub for that to allow people to go in and really look at custom or curated, you know, events and say, this way I want to participate. If you don't mind, kind of share with the audience, considering that this is Tech Tuesday and that you've gone through the process of having intellectual property, then building out technology and launching it. Talk to the listeners a little bit about that journey. If you don't mind, just kind of share with them what it's like to be a founder and then, you know, some of the ups and some of the downs of that entire experience.
Yeah, so really interesting, right? Especially because of my background, JC, I think it's important for people to understand that I spent 25 years as a retail executive before stepping out, you know, 100% to say it's time, right? So Sherry and I looked at this thing and said, if we don't create it now, someone else is going to create, you know, this vision. And the life of a founder has been very interesting. Obviously, some challenges there. Right. It's not easy. As a matter of fact, it's hard to be a full time entrepreneur. You know, I think sometimes we look at the glamour and the glitz of it. But really, it's a lot of hard work to build a platform like this. It's a tech based platform where we're talking about software development. It takes a lot of time. You have to be very, very patient. And then every time you work on one thing and you feel like it's fixed, there's a bug on the other end somewhere. So this journey for me full-time has been since 2018, and there's been a lot of learnings. One of the things that I'll share, and I share this on a regular basis, is an entrepreneur, and this is for everybody throughout life, but specifically for entrepreneurs, we all go through ups and downs, right? So that's a part of life. One thing about an entrepreneur and building what we've been building is the frequency in regards to those ups and those downs, right? Those peaks and those valleys. And what I share with people is that 12 o'clock on any given day, I can receive a call and there's great news and I feel like we're on top of the world and everything is rolling like we want. And by 3 p.m., I can get another call that makes you literally say, why am I doing this anymore? And then by 6 p.m., it's like you get another, you know, you have another call or email that comes through and it's like, yeah, wow, this is amazing, right? Like, and it makes you feel like I'm doing the right thing again. And you live to see the next day, and it's almost like you start all over again, right? There's a lot of ups and downs, peaks and valleys. But I'll tell you what, it's extremely rewarding to build something that you believe is a value to other people And then they literally validate that for you. They either tell you, they show you. It's an amazing experience. So I'll start there, and I can go deeper if you want me to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one thing that you're mentioning on this roller coaster of an experience of being a tech founder is that that's no different than just being a standard business owner. And there's so many misconceptions as it relates to having a concept or having a technology that you want to bring to the world. You think that it might just be the product, but it's never the product. It's the business of market placement, market entry, how to grow, how to scale, fundraising. It's all of those different components together that makes it difficult. And you're trying different things to ensure that, number one, you're going in the right direction, but even the right direction might be subjective. If you don't mind, talk to us a little bit about direction, in which I know that Mile has gone through some iterations. But how do you distinguish what's the direction versus what's the distraction?
Yeah, so it's really easy. That's a great question, because I think we all deal with that as entrepreneurs. It's very easy to get distracted, right? Because things are, you know, part of being an entrepreneur is being fluid, right? However, you have to really be focused on what you want to accomplish. And as I go back and I think through where we started, and we started with this idea and this concept, if you want to go all the way back, and people say, how'd you guys come up with this idea? That happens all the time. Well, I relocated 10 times throughout my career. Sherry was with me, I think, 5 of those times. And what we recognized is that in every single city, large or small, people had the same need, right? Things to do, places to go, food to eat. But once you leave a city, people always reach out to your friends, family members, say, hey, when I go to New York, I want to go out to a restaurant. Where should I go? So, you know, knowing that and experiencing that, but then also when we started this concept, it was before apps were available. So we literally started this idea thinking about software that companies would use as a perk, you know, for employees. And we would work with, you know, the promoters, and they would have these perks to get access to these events. And one thing led to another, and then apps were developed. So we created this idea and then evolved with the industry thinking we'll create it or develop an app. But talking about staying focused and learning over time, the company evolved from, hey, we want to build an app, which nobody wanted to invest in an app company. But as we got deeper into the industry, we learned that what we were developing really overall is an entertainment software and lifestyle data analytics company, right? So on the front side, the entertainment software piece is what we have created with Mile, and that's going to give you that user experience. But on the back end, it's the lifestyle behavioral data piece to it. So when we think about big data, and not from a invasion standpoint, but giving people more of what they really want. We're like, it's 2022, and the fact that we struggle in a conversation, what do you want to do tonight? I don't know. What do you want to do? I have no idea. You figure it out. No, you figure it out, right? Like, think about those conversations still happening in 2022 with all this technology around us. So then we learned, like, okay, entertainment software, lifestyle data analytics, but we want to incorporate curated activities, right, through machine learning, AI, right, advanced technology. And now we're looking at, okay, how do we look at the metaverse and how do we look at blockchain as far as our advancement in this tech space? And we've really grown and evolved tremendously in that thought. Now, there's no way we were looking at it that way when we first started. So hopefully that helps people understand, like, the evolution of the growth over the years as you progress, as you get deeper into the industry, as you learn more, as you go through understanding what customers are looking for and with how technology is changing and how you want to be on the front end. We've kind of gone through all of that while trying not to be distracted with all of the other things that are going on.
Well, you make a lot of really good points, though. The first point is the iterations of Mile, and how it began even before some of the current or consistent methods of people searching for opportunities. You were already thinking about, how do we go about doing this in a much more efficient way, in a much more universal way? And so apps became the avenue for it. But the point is, you had to shift and adjust some based on, number one, how you viewed your own product, but then number two, the changes that were happening in the world right before your eyes. And how difficult is it to make those changes and those adjustments, especially when you've already carved out a path?
Yeah, so I think the change is more difficult if you are not as open-minded as you can or should be as an entrepreneur, right? we all have, you know, one thing that we were, I read this somewhere, I'm trying to remember, and then people talk about it all the time, right? It's like, don't fall in love with your idea, right? And the reason why they say that is because if you are not willing to make adjustments, if the idea doesn't work as well as you want it to, then you're stuck and you're done, it's over, right? In a lot of cases. So having that flexibility and that fluidity to make those adjustments, to evolve or to pivot, popular term, right? Or to pivot as needed is critically important to be successful. We have, because of what we've developed, we always get ideas from people, right? Why? Because what we've created is not necessarily a new idea, right? Like people think, I've had at least 200 people tell me they had the same idea. It's the execution that's the hard part, right? Like literally saying I'm going to implement this idea is the challenge. But what we also get a lot of times is, have you thought about this? Or why don't you all do this? Or you should do this. Won't you try this? So you get all of those ideas and those thoughts, and you have to be cautious of not veering off and staying focused on the main objective of really providing that solution for your users and experience from a value standpoint. But then also for us, it was about being able to monetize it too, to generate capital, because we're focused on business and this is a business. And even though it's taking a long time to get to a point to generate revenue like we want, that's why you go into business.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, fundraising is a part of that, and proof of concept and getting audience feedback, all of those things are a part of it. I want to talk a little bit about the fundraising process, not so much, you know, what you guys had to do specifically or how many dollars that you had to bring in one way or the other, but just as a general mindset of fundraising. I know that you had to go through that process, and what are your thoughts concerning that, and what should other new startup founders or young entrepreneurs or novice entrepreneurs need to know regarding fundraising?
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack there. We have been fortunate enough to raise some capital to support us. We did go through the friends and family round first with a small group of friends, right, that said, we believe in you all and this idea as well, and we're willing to put in a few dollars, right? So that helped us to build the first version of the product. And then we went we bootstrapped, right, just to be frank. And for those that don't know what that is, that means we paid out of pocket for the rest of the development from that point on. And then we did another small friends and family round about a year and a half ago. And then last year, we made the decision that now is the time to go a little bit heavier. We were doing an angel round. And during that round, we ended up, one of our investors introduced us to a VC firm, and that VC firm decided to invest in us as well. So we picked up a combination of angel and VC dollars last year as a part of our pre-seed. That pre-seed was to support the development of our MVP, right? So that allowed us to actually develop what we said we were going to develop as far as the platform that was functional, that worked. And we're still adding on some unique features like ticketing that we just launched in January. But that allowed us to do that. Now we're working on our seed round, and that seed round is for product market fit, right? So now we want to continue to test out everything that we believe, continue to generate revenue, downloads, and learn as much as we can about each of the business streams or revenue streams that we have planned out, validate those, and then the next round will go towards scale, right? So when we raise our Series A, the goal is to be able to scale the business and go nationally with that. So that's what that looked like for us. And obviously, you know, a lot of people think about fundraising. I would say this is, if you are going to take on investors, a lot of people, what I found is, don't understand that you're giving up equity in that particular situation if you're going through the normal institutional funding means. So that's something that people should understand. Like, you're giving up a portion of your business. The goal is obviously to retain a majority share, but you're letting people invest in your idea, that believe in you, believe in the idea, and want to be a part of your success. So it's been a journey. Obviously, now that I'm fundraising again, it's a balance between running the business to generate capital for the business and doing fundraising calls to generate funds to continue support and put fuel on the fire to continue to grow the business fast. So that's where we are on that one, JC.
Well, you know, in this instance, as we discussed, you know, the fundraising portion of it. Part of it is, look how good my concept is, but a larger part of it turns into, well, who do you have helping you grow this company, and what are your plans, and how have this information been rolled out in a way that minimizes our risk? And how much of that did you have to learn that, you know, your idea was certainly a big vital part of it, but it was all the other ancillary realities that led toward decision making?
Whoa, man. Now we're getting into it. So most of those were learnings, right? All the ancillary things that are tied to this business, to having a startup, to growing it. I mean, all of those were learnings, right? The legal side of things. One of our largest expenses, and that's for mitigation to avoid litigation later, right, has been legal. Understanding technology and how it works and or doesn't work, and the resources you need there. From an investor standpoint, you know, putting together your pitch deck and having the right flow and conveying the right information in regards to your TAM, SAM, your SOM, right? Your total addressable, your serviceable, and your obtainable, right? Like, what does that really look like? And being able to articulate that, your go-to-market strategy. How are you going to bring this thing to market? And that's really hard. So there was a lot of things that we learned going through this process, just to try to get people to invest. And the protection piece, right? The defensibility of your product. Why would people use your product versus another product? Or why would they convert to your product if you're trying to take over market share in the space? There's so many dynamics to it, and really understanding all of that, digging in very, very deep, validating with your customers, right, as much as you are with your investors, because they're going to tell you the answers too. So there's so much to learn there, and you only learn by doing it, literally.
Well, you know, in this instance, you know, we're talking Tech Tuesdays here on Doctor's Orders. I am Dr. Baker. We're here with Kevin Lloyd, CEO and co-founder of Mile, Making Your Life Entertaining. And as we talk about, you know, fundraising, which is a massive part of really the tech space as a whole, but it's also a major part of any business, is where do we have the available funds? Do I need an infusion of cash? Will I have enough in my ramp up or in my roadway in order to continue to move forward? And as we talk about some of these other elements regarding your business, you know, you just mentioned how there were questions and challenges regarding your technology or your product that you had to defend. And looking to defend that, I'm certain that there were aspects that came out that you said, heck, we actually don't have an answer for that. Or actually, we're not even prepared for this. Or now that we know this, we might want to do that. How frequently did that happen in this journey? And then with that, how did that contribute to some of your pivots?
Yeah, so I would say fairly often that came up. And that could have been anything from something as simple as, can I use this out of state, right? to, do you have a patent for this, right? Like, from one extreme to another. So our product is patent pending. You know, we wanted to protect our IP. Mile is the most comprehensive event ticketing and entertainment platform that exists today, right? Like, as far as the feature set, if you look at the features itself, there's not another platform that marries up A to Z at this point, right? So for us, we wanted to make sure we protected that, and how uniquely our UI was designed on the platform as well. So those are things that we didn't know that we needed to do before, but we learned over time, because you do want to protect it, not just to say we protected it, but also, you know, having it protected from a patent perspective becomes an asset. And also, that means that if a larger corporation, because, you know, when it comes to building a platform, you think about acquisitions. If a company wants to use your IP, in a lot of cases, they will just acquire you. So that makes you attractive from an acquisition standpoint as well, and or to protect it if you don't want to be acquired. So those are things that we just did not know that we learned along the way. A situation for us is, you know, dealing with the ticketing side of things, you know, there are tax implications in certain cities or municipalities or states. Those are all new learnings. How do you set your business up the right way for that? So working with, you know, tax experts, working with legal experts,
And in this day and time of technology, we see lawsuits that pop up all the time. So literally making sure you have all the protection in your terms and your conditions that are needed and working with the legal team. That's why I said it's one of our biggest expenses. A lot of that is to protect all of the investments that have been made and what we're developing and building.
Well, you talk about the investments that were made, and then you morph that into how your patent pending status also increases the likelihood and reality of having assets, in which those aren't the only assets that are built by the company. But when you think about a tech company and you think about technology as a whole, for the average person, it may be difficult to determine what's an asset versus what isn't. And when you're working through intellectual property rights, when you're working through legalities, and when you're working through the build out, oftentimes you start to figure out that, heck, what I'm building actually is a little bit larger than what I might have even anticipated. Maybe what I hoped to do was this one function, but now that I've learned about assets or I've learned about technology in a much richer fashion, you start understanding that you have newer parts of your business that may arise. And I'll provide some examples for color. You know, we talk about the cell phone and how it's really a computer now, but what most people don't understand is that a cell phone is a host of companies combined as a conglomerate. You know, that camera you use was many times built by a company that sold its ability off to Apple or to Samsung for the right to use that camera function. And so when a new model comes out, many times that's a new company that's been acquired for that intellectual property or that asset that's going to be compatible with that particular cell phone. And so that's why your phone costs $1,000 or $1,100, is because it's gone through that many iterations. When you started to look at things such as wireframes and you started to look at user interface and user experience, otherwise known as UI and UX, how did that start to really make your mind see your product differently? And then how did it start to change how you view the business, even as it relates to the comprehensive nature of Mile?
Well, you know, when you start with the vision, that's one thing. But once you start to go through that process, like you said, with the wireframes, which is where you're really thinking through, right, what is this going to look like? You're seeing it visually for the first time. First of all, it's an amazing experience. And then when you tie in, you know, the UI, you know, from a coloration, from a, you know, touching a button here, and what does that look like to turn into the UX, which is the experience for the user. All of that is just like, it's like raising a child, right? Like literally, and that's why they say, this is your baby, right? And like, is your baby, you know, what does your baby look like? You're getting attached to your baby. Do you love it? You fall in love with it. And that's what happens when you build a product. You really do get attached to it because you're building it from scratch. And going through that whole process is and was amazing, and it still is to this point, because we keep adding new features and or enhancing our features. So that has been part of the evolution and the growth. And, you know, that's where that attachment comes. So that's been great. The other part that I would talk about, as you mentioned, you know, kind of like that evolution, is the getting into the data side of things and understanding that this company, so when I mentioned earlier, we went from, hey, trying to develop an app, to recognizing in at some point the light bulb going off that this is a software company, not just an app, and that, you know, from a lifestyle or behavior data analytics, that there's power in that. And are the ability to connect from a target audience standpoint, you know. So my first startup is a digital marketing company. And mm-hmm. Understand from the ad buys that we get how important that is, that you can get to the right consumer. And then through Mile, being able to develop a means to be able to do that, but doing it in a way that's relevant for the user versus just the advertiser, is very, very unique in itself. So, you know, us growing into those aspects of the business has been pretty exciting, and it's still a learning. One thing that's shared with us regularly by certain people is you all haven't even scratched the surface on the number of use cases that you all have with this platform. So the question that you have, JC, it continues every single day for us.
Mm-hmm. And as it continues to push, you know, you're looking at ways to remain sustainable, to remain viable, to ensure that you're not using antiquated practices. You mentioned some realities earlier today, everything from crypto to the metaverse, and what does that mean? Whether you are a fan of what the metaverse brings or how it's going to interact, as a tech company, you have to say, well, how do we participate in that? Is there a scenario where, number one, either we capitalize off of its existence, or are we losing because we don't include that technology based on the prevailing ideas from what might be your target audience? And so not only having knowledge of your product and where that market lies, but having knowledge of other technologies that exist as a substitute or a complement becomes vital to the not just your growth, but really the overall sustained health of the company. Tell us a little bit about, you know, we know what some of the negatives are as being a business owner and some of the obstacles that exist, but what have been some of the positive things outside of building the technology that's out in the world that you now can see? What are some of the positives and things that you stand on that you look back and say, man, this part of it has been rewarding, or this part of it I didn't know exists, but I'm glad that it did because of what it's been able to do?
Yeah, so great question. And before I answer that, I want to circle back real fast on something you mentioned earlier. You hinted toward on the investor side of the people, right? Like having the right people. And I would say that's a critical piece for those that are listening, you know, having the right team, but then having the right advisors around you. And fortunately, especially in this tech space, we have a couple of advisors that are really tied to technology that's helping us stay on the forefront. And I think that's important. And then going into your question is really, JT, we've been able to do a few different things with the company. And so right now we, and I won't share the details of it yet, but because it hasn't been formally announced, but we are recently engaged with a college or university, an HBCU, that's going to introduce MIAL to their students this upcoming fall. Mm-hmm. And going back to your question is, sitting down with a client or potential client and walking through the product and them seeing the value and telling you how they want to use your product and them being excited about that, that's what's the rewarding part as well. And we've seen it not just in this case, but we've seen it with event hosts that see the functionality of what we can provide that are wowed by it. We do office hours every Tuesday and Wednesday, where we literally introduce people to the platform. We do demos and we answer their questions. And every one of those calls, I'm a knock on wood, right? Because we're batting 1,000. Everyone that's been on those calls has been amazed by the product, but then also how they see the value and how they can use it and why they want to use it. So that's been the coolest part of building the product is now with user adoption is the excitement of the people that are using it.
Mm-hmm. Understood. And, you know, if we're going back to a couple things, you said the right people. I hear the right people every day. You know, you got to have the right this, the right that. But my question and challenge to all of our patients and to anyone that we're either partnering with or I'm coming to speak for, is I say, how do you determine and denote what's right? Is it based on, you know, what you think? Is it based on some other metrics that are passed down to you by maybe another governing body or entity? Is it based on skill set? And so with that, you know, I'm not saying that there is one way over another, but I am curious to how you determine what right might be, you know, and what that looks like, number one, for MIAL, or what does that look like overall?
Yeah, I think right is probably synonymous to a degree with value, right? And, you know, one of the things from my prior career that I learned that was really important for me as a leader is that everyone wants to either add value, right, and or be valued, right? So, and feel valued. So it's really important as we look at, you know, when I say the right people, and by the way, you don't always have the right people, and sometimes you do, right? So what that means is that person able to add value to what it is that you're trying to accomplish? And then do they also feel like they are a value add? And if they do, they're going to give you more of that. We have been blessed and fortunate enough to have people around us that have been adding value to what we are creating, the input, the support, the challenges, like why are we doing it this way? What about this? Have you thought about this? We get those on a regular basis, as well as the kudos and the congrats when we do make accomplishments. But I think that is very important. But then having people who are really good at what they do and they are experts in their space helps us together as a team to come together to make some of, I think, the right decisions and continue to progress in the right direction.
Makes sense. I want to jump back on that. I need to break for a station identification. And today's Tech Tuesday is brought to you by Pro Elite Training. That's Pro and the word elite as one word, Pro Elite Training. It is the proprietary method of how to train with athletes through the metronome of music. To increase rhythm, tempo, and pace, you can learn everything from how to dribble a basketball to a three-punch combo. Do that with NBA players, NFL players, and current MMA fighting champions. You can find Pro Elite at in your Play Store or in the Google Store. You can also get to it on your web browser by getproelite.com. So you can download that today. It's a freemium model. Get hundreds of drills with professional athletes to help you, whether you're a sports enthusiast or you're an athlete, increase your skill set through the metronome of music to increase rhythm, tempo, and pace. So once again, if you're just joining us, we have Kevin Lloyd, the co-founder and CEO of Mile, Making Your Life Entertaining, which is a tech platform, and we're learning more about his journey, the things that he's learned since launching this company, and how he's gone about using technology to enhance our life. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so at 859-291-2255. And if you want to send a message directly, you can at info@drbaker.us. So once again, Kevin, we were talking about the right people. And so when we look at right, a lot of times we're looking at the complements of what you have on the team as opposed to what might be the substitutes. And so when I'm talking about the complements, we're looking at skill set. We're looking at the same thing that you said, which is value. We're looking at things such as effective commitment, in which there's three different types of commitment, but effective commitment is the one that most people are connected to, is when they think about something being in their heart, something being passionate, something they can't live without. And so that level of effective commitment is important. But when it comes to investment, you know, skill set, experience, connectivity, network, all of that's important when an investor is looking at your team. Kind of share a little bit about those experiences, because you have a good team that's around you. That team has been really loyal. You guys have done a lot, from what I've been able to tell, to help each other along with this journey. But when you guys ever were in a pitch competition or in a pitch opportunity, whichever experience you had, was the team questioned? Was the team challenged? Were the individuals looking to see, why is this a team member, or do you have this specific skill set on your in your company in order to enhance the company? Were those realities for you?
You know, only a couple of times, right? We haven't been as challenged on that aspect, except for, I would actually say, during an investor call where, you know, a couple of investors wanted to get a better understanding of the team, especially on the technology side, right? Why? Because we're an entertainment software company. So they wanted to understand, you know, who our lead developer was. They want to understand who our CTO was. There's a huge expectation, right? You're a tech company. Who's your CTO? What can they bring to the table? And what does that experience look like? So that is one that I would have to say we did experience that. Fortunately, we were in pretty sound shape, right? So we have a great lead developer who's been with us for 5 years. Our CTO is one of the top recognizable individuals in our region as well as abroad. In the tech space. So we had the validation points, but to some people that is very, very, very important. What I will tell you, JC, is that as we continue to grow as a team, we clearly are at a point where we're looking at, you know, with this next round, who will we hire, right? That can bring the experience, the credibility, and then that value to the table that will allow us to, one, build the business, but then two, from an investor standpoint, is going to create that level of comfort with, you know, they have the right team with the caliber and experience to actually get the job done. Because at the end of the day, they're looking at the return on investment. And by the way, so are we, right? This is not a game. We're serious about what we're looking to accomplish. And while we do it all in the spirit of making your life entertaining, we also recognize for our investors, we want them to have an abundant return as well.
You know, what are some of the pitfalls that you have either encountered or that you see? Because not only have you been entrenched in Mile, but you've been around the space. You've been around the tech space. You've seen accelerators. You've worked with other companies. You've helped other companies grow at levels. What are some of the pitfalls that you traditionally see in the tech space, especially amongst new entrepreneurs?
So I'll tell you, unfortunately, one of the biggest challenges is funding, right? And sometimes I've seen companies that have been undercapitalized, and when that happens, it's hard to take the business to the next level. And even me personally, right, what I've experienced is to do what we're trying to do requires a lot of dollars. It requires that investment. And one of the mistakes that, you know, we make is taking too long to raise the capital that we need in order to just run the business and take it to the level that you need to. And, you know, just to be frank, too, you know, being a black entrepreneur, we recognize that there's disparities there as well, right? The numbers indicate it. And those are some additional challenges. But a pitfall would be not leveraging every resource possible to get the capital to run the business. That's a combination of self-funding, right, which could be you yourself if you have the means. It could be crowdfunding, right, through general, right, through like a Kickstarter or Indiegogo campaign or Fundable. It could be equity crowdfunding where people now can put a stake in your business that allows you to leverage, right, non-accredited investors to get the capital that you need. And or, you know, if you have, you know, returns, you know, in returns to growth every month over month, 30%, 50% growth over a period of time, then you might be, especially if it's a hyper-growth type company, you might be viable for VC or institutional investments. Understanding those is a pitfall in itself, JC, is what does it take for me to really run this business or get this business off the ground itself or this startup? How do I get it done with the right resources financially? But in order to get those right resources financially, you have to have access, right, to two things, access to the right people and then access to the resources to get access to the capital.
Now, in that case, is these are all still learning, you know, curves for all business owners, and funding comes in a host of ways. One, you talked about if someone was self-funding or even if they were bootstrapping every aspect of it, you still have to understand what metrics to even pay attention to in order to do it yourself, even if you had the budget and the means yourself, or if you have to work to do it and piece the entire project together, still understanding what you're seeking to attain and then having the right underpinnings to support that is vital. Well, also when you think about, you know, collecting, whether it's institutional money, whether it's just outside investment, that becomes very important as well. You know, talk to me about how, I say, astute you had to become in order to really navigate all the different areas of business. And let me qualify that. You know, we've talked a lot about how important legal was and preserving your intellectual property. We also talked about investment and the dangers of undercapitalization, but you also had to deal with just the flat out marketing of your tool and your platform, or the commercialization of it. How does it look? How does it feel? You know, when someone sees it, do they understand it or are they confused by it? There's a host of other factors that you had to kind of become an expert in, or at least proficient in order to adequately push the company. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's correct. And fortunately, on our end, because we kind of grew up hosting events, and that's what Mile is, you know, a big part of, right, is events and activities and things that are going on. I had the opportunity, or I should say we had the opportunity, especially because I hosted a lot of events, to see firsthand the user experience. And that is invaluable, right? Like to literally hear what people say on the spot, right? Whether it worked well for them, whether it did not work well for them, whether they really liked the concept and the idea, whether they felt like no big deal, right? Like to see all of that firsthand was like, I mean, that was as perfect as it could be as a founder to see that experience. And that helped to navigate how we moved, right? It helped to play a role in two big steps that we took, which was making a decision that we were going to go ahead and build the product that we really wanted, because our proof of concept was literally that was a minimum viable product. That was a true MVP. It did the basics, but it didn't give us everything, but it gave us enough to put in front of people to learn what they really wanted. So then when we said, hey, let's go ahead and develop this, I would say we went to our true pro MVP slash Cadillac version. That allowed us to really have a couple of focus groups with our target audience, which, by the way, are females, and 18 to 34 now, but we started out 25 to 45. We made some adjustments there, and we sat down with these focus groups to get input from them because they make a lot of decisions. They do a lot of the planning around events and activities for their loved ones, their families, their kids, their girlfriends, whatever it may be. So that really played a role in us making the decision. And page by page, screenshot by screenshot, they helped to determine what it looked, what it should look and feel like. And we created that with the hopes that they would literally want to share and refer to their friends and family members. And that's where we are today. So, yes, there's a lot of learnings there. The go-to-market, the marketing, doing geofence campaigns and targeting folks to try to get a million impressions in 30 days. We've done all of that to try to convert downloads. And there's a lot of learnings. You know, certain campaigns work, certain campaigns don't. But you learn along the way.
Well, I think in that instance, a lot of people are looking for the proverbial, you know, magic solution, magic potion, if you will, regarding business. You know, I talk to anywhere between 50 and 60 businesses in any given month from all over the world. And there are many times that I'm talking to a new startup founder or somebody that has an idea for something. And because of social media, because of television, because of misinformation, we believe that, hey, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do these numbers that are really so high, so broad, with no legitimate plan behind it, but they believe it because they've seen an exit from another company, and that exit made them believe, well, heck, my concept is better than theirs. All I have to do is this activity or that activity. You talked earlier about the patience that it takes. Talk to me about the mindset, because patience is only one portion of a mindset. We talked about the roller coaster and how you deal with just knowing that at 2 o'clock you might have a bad call, but at 6 o'clock you get a great one. But really having a mindset of long term and plans for the long term, how do you essentially get a long term mentality, and how do you execute it with team members that also want things to happen quicker, things to come to fruition? And then even if you add on top of that, investors that might want to see a return quicker or really have a better appreciation of the dividends, what type of mentality does it take as a startup founder to navigate all of those different emotions, those different perspectives, and those different realities because so much time takes place?
Yeah, that's a wonderful, wonderful question. And I'll tell you what, the word that came into mind as you were asking that question was journey. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We have to recognize that this is a journey, and it's going to take time. You have to embrace the journey because it's not going to be an easy journey, right? You're gonna drive like you're driving across the country, right? You're going to go through storms, and it's going to be hot at times. It's going to be cold. There's times where you might be the only one up driving, maybe other people in the car with you, but everybody fell asleep, and you're driving, and you're tired too. But you keep on going, right? And you do it as safely as you can. The journey is real, and you have to embrace it. If you really have a solid strategy, and then you are tactically putting the right things in place to execute that strategy. However, with the fluidity to adjust the tactics a little bit to still get to the end goal, then you would be all right, especially if you are documenting and or tracking what it is you're doing. I think what happens a lot of times is there's not a good strategy in place. There's not a really good plan in place, and or it's not being documented. So you can actually see the progress that you're making over time. When people don't see the progress, they feel like we're not accomplished, because you may not be at the goal, but you have to take it in steps. That's why they talk about milestones. And what are those milestones? And for us, we spell milestones with a Y instead of an I, right? That would be the mile way to do it. But you have to have those milestones that you want to accomplish. And then you need to be able to document what worked well, what didn't go well, and talk about those things, and then make adjustments before your next milestone. And I think that that's really important, JC, not just for us as founders, but for our investors. Communication with our investors, and this is a learning too, right? So communicating with your investors on a frequently enough basis for them to know what's going on and not be in the dark is critically important. When people are in the dark, you know, what happens is they start to get worried. They don't know, if they don't know what you're doing, the natural tendency is for them to go based off what they do know. And what they do know is the streets are talking about how tight things are right now and how bad things are or how bad they're going to be. And if your investors don't understand it, based off your industry, your product, or your market, this is the optimal time for you, they're going to be thinking automatically that you're struggling. So being proactive, saying, hey, this is where we're going, this is the progress that we're seeing, or not, right? Guess what? If you're not, it's okay to let them know that, hey, we're struggling here, and here's what we're doing or planning to do, I think is important as well. And the same thing for your team. Team has to know, you know, we're in some torrential rains right now, but this is how we're going to stay the course. This is how we're going to get where we need to go, and this is how we're going to hold tight together to make it through. If you don't communicate well with them, and if you don't embrace the journey, nobody else is going to embrace the journey. And as a founder, you have to be the leader on that.
Well, you mentioned having a journey and embracing that journey. You also have to include vision on that, because as much as you have to pivot the business in order for it to have viability or sustainability, you also have to stay the course of the vision to where you don't lose what it was that you were seeking to accomplish in the first place, to have enough perseverance to see things as opposed to just whether it's adjusting or pivoting too quickly, and enough vision to be able to see everything through the journey. And so in that case, when you talk about having a team, that team has to also share the same vision. And I found oftentimes that can be pretty difficult, where you might share the same, you know, I would say goals at a level, but it's not the same vision of how to obtain those goals. And when you're a new company, you're running into so many roadblocks and challenges just inherent inside of the space by itself, nothing that you would have done that would resemble self-sabotage, that not only are you jumping those obstacles, but you also have to work really hard to ensure that the vision is shared amongst the team, so therefore it can be appropriately demonstrated to a larger entity that may seek participation at any level. Talk to me, or really to the listeners, about how you've been able to keep your vision intact even with all of the changes that you've had to make throughout the years.
Yeah, so there have been varying levels of being successful there. And I'll tell you what I've learned works the best is, one, we have a frequency or cadence of communication. But then also with that communication, so for instance, we use Trello, is having your vision tied to your key activities, right? So for instance, on your Trello board, having the vision right in the top left-hand corner. When you start your conference calls, talking about the vision and what are we doing and why we're doing that, right? And then how the things that we're seeing works within the vision, like continuing to tie it and weave it in. Like, it has to be a part of the culture of what you're creating in order for people to really get why you're doing it. I have definitely seen times where members of the team have said, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be doing. And even though I'm thinking that is clear, right, they literally said, like, they didn't get it. So then we have to go right back to, okay, hold on. Is it in front of the team? Am I articulating or are we communicating it? Then we're connecting the dots. So I've learned from that to continue to weave it in on a regular, consistent basis so we all know why we're doing what it is that we're doing as a team collectively. That's a great question, because that's a big miss for a lot of people in a lot of businesses.
Mm-hmm. It is. And, you know, with me going into companies to help them understand leadership, it's something that we talk about regularly, is how to make sure that all the members of the team are looking at things similarly, even if they have different goals. And even if their rationale for participation differs, that vision still has to be synchronized amongst all the members in order for you to have a solid foundation of unity and to walk in the same direction. For our listeners in the short amount of time that we have left, talk to the listeners. What is the biggest or the largest point of differentiation as to why they should log in today, sign up, and get Mile, in comparison to any of the other usual behaviors that they might have today? Let's start with that one first.
So let me break this down real quick. There's four key things that I talk about with mild in regard to why you would want to use or support mild. The first one is, I'll go to the promoter side of the marketplace, is the only platform that you can literally post your event, promote your event, right, through our amplification feature and send it out to people within 50 miles of your event. You can also sell your tickets and capture engagement audience information, right? So that's one reason why people should use it. The second one is, if you're easily or seamlessly trying to find something to do, some place to go, some food to eat, you can do that quickly as well, which is the other reason why you'd want to utilize Mile. And within that interface, we have Uber, Lyft, Waze, Google Maps, and Apple Maps all tied into one. So you have a very easy way to even get to your location without having to go to three or four other apps. So this user experience is different than anything that you're used to today. The third reason is we have a referral program where you can refer people to the program using your custom link, and you can earn points that can be redeemed for dollars. And fourth is the fact that we have a nonprofit called Extra Mile International, where a portion of our proceeds are used to expose and educate underserved youth to entertainment, the arts, and travel. So no matter who you are, when you use Mile, you're adding value to other people's lives. And if you actually do a transaction on Mile, you're literally helping them to have a great experience. So those are the reasons why, JC, I think people would want to utilize the platform and have a unique experience themselves.
All right, fantastic. And if anyone wanted to have Mile today, first and foremost, or if they wanted to get in contact with you, whether it's for opportunity, whether they've got events that they want to share, how do they go about doing both?
Yep. So they can literally go to mile.com, M-Y-L-E.com, and they, what they'll see is they'll have the option to download the app through iOS, through Android, or sign up for our desktop version. So those that don't like to use their phones, you have the desktop version. You can do the same things on the platform. You can post your events today. You can begin to promote your events today, sell tickets to your events today, and you can email us at hello@mile.com, hello@mile.com, hello@mile.com.
Fantastic. And, you know, once again, I thank you so much for joining the show today. Hopefully all you listeners, there's a few things that you've been able to learn from Kevin Lloyd, the co-founder, CEO of Mile, Making Your Life Entertaining, is that number one, your company itself has to have a strong foundation that's conducive for growth, meaning that you got to look at your protective measures. So in this instance, if you have intellectual property, you have to go through the appropriate channels to protect and preserve that. You have to have the right team. And once again, we determine team in this dialogue and conversation as having the complementary skill sets, having the appropriate amount of value, having the expected effective commitment and loyalty to the company, and then outlining that in a way that allows others to execute. Fundraising is very important to the mission, and that you have to have the right amount of capital, the correct amount of resources in order to get to market, and not ultimately get to market, but stay in market as you work to capture more market share. There were a lot of valuable tips and really recommendations, if you will, that were offered by Kevin Lloyd, as he was able to give you his personal experiences being a tech founder and doing it for years and doing it all across the United States of America, and how there are many components to it, and that patience is very valuable, and that you need that patience in order to move your company to where you go, so you can temper essentially the emotional side of it and then operate with the right level of expectation. And so that way, if you combine all of that, that gives you a recipe for success as a new tech, or really as a new startup founder of any type. You know, it's sometimes difficult to differentiate, but a mom and pop shop that you're just now creating, it's going to still take that same patience in order to get to market and generate the type of following that you need. So everyone, thanks a lot for joining us on today's episode of Tech Tuesdays on Doctor's Orders. I am Dr. Baker. Thank you so very much. Continue to follow us on the live stream and here on 1320 The Voice. And I wish your business all the best health.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677. by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.